Hello and welcome to Criterion.
Close up.
Was that good?
Who was that? Was that Kylo Ren or was that Darth Vader?
I can't do either. I'm not a fan.
Or was that Yoda?
We're gonna get into that.
I know first aid. I know CPR.
I think Yoda would be up close. Whatever.
Call 911. Bring the AED.
Up Criterion close or something. I don't know. Okay.
So if folks don't know what we're talking about, we're talking about Star Wars. I'm Mark Hurdy. I'm here with my co-host and producer, as always, Mr. Aaron West. And we are joined tonight by the esteemed David Blakeslee from Criterion Cast and the Criterion Reflections blog. So great to have you here, David. Thank you,
gentlemen. I'm very much looking forward to this conversation.
I'm technically Aaron Wren, by the way. if this podcast doesn't go well, I'm going to take a baseball bat and just destroy some furniture.
Yeah.
That's cool. I'm Darth Herney, and if things don't go well, I'm going to use a chokehold on both of you.
All right.
And I'm just Luke. I'm just going to be quiet for, the last 10 minutes of the podcast there.
Spoiler alert.
Just turn around and just look at his pencil.
Well, he's technically been quiet for, okay. We are really into spoilers already. Kind of. Can you really spoil that?
We didn't really talk about it, guys, but I think everyone has seen this film, so should we just get into spoilers at the outset or keep it a little bit later?
It's open season as far as I'm concerned.
I got spoiled five times. Right. Five times on the same thing, and then some other stuff. Oh, we probably should say this is a bonus episode. Star Wars is not on Criterion. I don't think it ever will be.
No, this is not a spine number as of yet.
It's just an event, so. And and that's why we're talking about it, right? Just to kind of cover this big blockbuster. I think if it's not already, it's the biggest grossing film, or will be pretty soon, of all time.
Yeah.
It is domestically. Internationally, I think it still has a ways to go. It's hard to... It just opened in China, I saw, and it did very well. So I think it's on its way. It's a big deal. Of course, inflation, I think if they go by the...
Oh, yeah.
Well, of course, Gone with the Wind, inflation owns everything. Mm-hmm. And then the 77 Star Wars, I think inflation owns this. You remember, David.
Well, yeah, we'll get into that. I mean, the 77 Star Wars was a true unprecedented phenomenon. It was just a game changer, and that's where my kind of affiliation and affection for the Star Wars world, the universe, now the franchise began. I was just part of that wave. 1977, I was 15 going on 16, and this movie, just like the burgeoning punk rock scene, was... they were both right in my wheelhouse. So, time takes its toll and all, but as far as being a teenager when Star Wars and the Sex Pistols and the Ramones were all coming out, that's my golden age, So
it's quite a combo.
Yeah, it was a pretty exciting time. I mean, culture, music, media, everything was really in a time of turbulence and upheaval. And I loved it. I still have a lot of fondness. And I guess I'll just kind of open my bidding by saying that's really where Star Wars exists for me. It is a nostalgia trip. It's a throwback to, old school science fiction when it really just kind of launched up to a new level. As a kid back in the early 70s, I'd seen, Silent Running. I'd seen Logan's Run. Mm-hmm. I was a big fan of the Planet of the Apes movies and all that. And then Star Wars just kind of realized all the potential of these kind of, budding visions of the future, and the excitement, the technology, the special effects, the powerful music, the fun characters. It was an all engrossing world, and so it hit the culture really like a meteor strike. It had a huge impact, and so that's really kind of where this movie rests with me, is just a fondness. Of course, I've seen it go on to become this kind of world dominating force, no pun intended, but that's really...
I see what you did there.
Yeah, well, pretty much laid it out there, but it is, and so I recognize that it's gone well beyond that, first creative, outburst, but that's to me still That's the prime. That's the essence of everything that's followed. And you know, I took my kids to see the special editions in the theaters as they were coming up, and we were all excited about the prequels, and we saw The Phantom Menace pretty much opening mm-hmm. weekend, and we thought it was pretty cool for a while, and then it starts to settle. It's like, maybe it's not all that it was cracked up to be, but I kind of grew up my kids watching those films, but we were never like completely bonkers over the top, but it's been part of our family's experience and part of my own cultural education, I guess, if you will.
Sure.
And so I'm intrigued to see where it goes from here. And obviously we've just got this new installment. It's taken the cinema by storm, but I think it's a movie with some issues, and I guess that's what we're gonna pick apart a little bit tonight.
All right, wet towel time.
That's right.
The galaxy continues. So, Aaron, what is your connection to the Star Wars universe?
Well, I guess we're dating ourselves here. So I'll just say that
we are.
When the original Star Wars came out, I was 5. So I didn't see it. Actually, I think I did see it pretty soon after. I think my parents took me. Probably not in 77. I'm a little younger than David. Not during his or nothing like his experience.
Mm-hmm.
Probably 78, 79. I do remember seeing it in the theaters, and I remember thinking, when you're 5, 6, pew, 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 that's great. And, there's plenty of comic relief, and, it's kind of a kid's film in a way. I mean, it still is.
Oh, yeah. I totally buy that. I mean, I probably saw it 6 or 8 times in the theater in its original run there. So,
wow.
Yeah, I was into it.
So, and being a young boy, and Mark, you can probably relate, if people in the 70s and 80s, if they buy you presents for Christmas, they're going to buy you action figures. And so I think I got into that a little bit. And I do remember I remember Empire and Return of the Jedi. In fact, I remember waiting in line for Return of the Jedi in a mall. that was what, 80, 83, 84?
83.
Okay, yeah. And, so I liked the films but it was more as a kid, and I outgrew them. Flash forward to the prequels. I think my experience was a little different than you, David. I have a little story. I told it on the Wrong Reel podcast, actually my first podcast, but I'll tell it again because I think it does fit into this movie. So I was somewhat excited about the new film. There was a lot of hype, just like this time. I'm sure you guys remember.
And oh, yes.
So, some friends of mine had bought tickets in advance, and was this 2000? It wasn't as easy. There was no Fandango back then. I don't know how they did it. So
it was 99.
99s. So they had bought tickets on, I think it came out on like a Thursday. I might be getting these dates wrong. They bought tickets for like a Friday. So anyway, we were going to go that day, and then I was going to go with my brother again on the Sunday, my little brother, who was a big fan. Wild hair, I decided to go to the midnight screening because I was just so hyped up. I think I just couldn't sleep, and I just went out there and saw it. And what I saw was absolute dreck. I hated it the instant I saw it. And, years had passed. I'd gotten somewhat of a film education, and it just didn't have that same magic. And so then I had to go the next night with my friends, and it was even worse. And,
oh, wow.
And then I had to go with my brother, and it was, I felt like Clockwork Orange, So
with your eyes propped open.
I've never seen it again.
Strapped into a seat.
I mean, of course, you can't avoid pop culture, Jar Jar, all that stuff. And I did see the other two, and I didn't care for them. I guess I liked the last one more than the others, but I still didn't really care for it too much. Did you guys like the Sith?
It was interesting just to sort of see the dots connected of how Anakin became Darth Vader, and it was, I always felt like the production values and the special effects and all the whiz-bang flash stuff, these were fun movies to take my kids to. My boys were, 12 and 10 when Phantom Menace came out, and then, you know, by the time the was it Revenge of the Sith episode 3, I think my boys were already in their teens and were kind of off doing their things with their friends, so I think they had all seen it first,
right,
and then I
right.
went to I think maybe just one or two of my sons. I've got three boys. We went to see Revenge of the Sith. So, but by that time it was just it's just another Star Wars movie. Okay, the latest installment. You know, and that's really all it was. And this one here, it feels like they've kind of ginned it up to be, this is awesome, everybody, and you know, shedding tears of joy, and just, you know, and even, you know, the film culture on social media has changed so much. We didn't have Letterboxd.
Oh, sure, yeah.
IMDb was around, but it was nothing like it is now. You certainly didn't have, you know, Twitter and you know, all the other stuff going on nearly to this level. And so it's been pretty fascinating to me to sort of see this kind of, to me, feels kind of like a manufactured mania for a film that is
it's a commodity.
It's fun, but it's what it is, right? Exactly. And so it's been a little disturbing, a little unsettling for me to hear.
A little off-putting.
Well, to hear, you know, I mean, it's one thing if you're a teenager or a youngster and you're all caught up in it, but this isn't really anything all that new, and I mean, this is not even getting into the, you know, kind of mimicking of the original Star Wars movie that is pretty clearly happening here. But it's,
I think we'll get into that.
But it's also just, you know, maybe there's been this pent up wait, this demand for real Star Wars to come back, but folks, you know, you're going to be getting just about as sick of this stuff as you are of the Avengers and, you know, all the other big box franchises out there, because we're going to be having a Star Wars movie every single year, probably for the next 10 or 12 years, you know.
The Splinter, so,
Until, as long as people keep buying tickets, which I don't see that slowing down, obviously
no,
the numbers bear that out, so, you know, it's just not going to happen.
Well, what about you, Mark? What's your Star Wars connection, I guess we can call it?
Well, I started pretty close to the same time you did, Aaron. We're close to the same age, though. I was even younger, so I remember seeing A New Hope, Star Wars.
When you were two?
When I was two. I think I must have seen it when it came back to theaters or something when I was like three or four.
Really?
So,
wow.
But I do remember seeing it. I remember seeing Empire at the drive-in and Return of the Jedi at you know, in the theater, of course. And I, like you, I had a ton of the ships and the action figures. I mean, it was really kind of the defining cinematic going experience for me as a kid, and also something that I played with more than any other toy. So, you know, it was really definitive for me there, and it just is part of my lexicon, so to speak. And I actually delved back into it again. Back in the early 90s, there was a book series that came out by Timothy Zahn. It ended up being called Thrawn Trilogy.
Yeah.
Yep. It started in 91, and there was three books that came out. And it takes place 5 years after the end of Return of the Jedi. And I got into it. I got sucked in. I was in high school, and I thought it was – I still think it's a great, you know, really well-written series, frankly, probably a better story than we got in, you know, and much more original than we got in, you know, The Force Awakens. But, you know, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on that, but it was just that really rekindled my interest. And, you know, it was this expanded universe leading up to The Phantom Menace coming out in, you know, 99. And that came out, and I should say, you know, We got more Star Wars in 97, if you guys remember. We got the special editions, the tinkering editions.
Right.
That's the ones that I took my boys to see in the theater, and we dug it. And it was, I still remember kind of getting the old goosebumps when the, you know, the opening music starts and the crawl, and there's my guy sitting right next to me. And it was a little father and son, kind of a vicarious thrill just for them. And they were pretty wide-eyed and pretty blown away because, you know, we had all the Lego spaceships, and now here's some pretty sweet stuff buzzing around on the screen. So, yeah, there's definitely a lot of warm feelings about all of that.
And they'd probably never seen it on the big screen.
No, not at all. So. They hadn't really seen too many of those kind of movies at all. You know, but this was, you know, this was like a kind of a awakening experience for them. And we ended up getting some of the Star Wars Legos later on when that whole thing happened. So it's, It's definitely part of the fabric of our lives.
Sure, yeah. It's amazing how multi-generational it is. Mm-hmm. You know, now you have people going to the new ones that were bred on the prequels.
Right.
And and that like the prequels and don't like the old ones because they're old.
Prefer the prequels.
Yeah, definitely.
Those are almost like the black and white movies that nobody watches.
Right. So I saw the special editions, and my claim to fame, similar to your story, Aaron, is, you know, my claim to dorkdom, I guess, is at one point all three movies, the special editions, were playing, so I saw all three of them in one day.
Wow.
Which made me think I was cool, but it was fun.
Totally cool.
I'd do it again. And then, you know, of course, the prequels came out, and I'm not a prequel apologist, although I do think I enjoy them more than a lot of people do. I don't subscribe to the George Lucas destroyed my childhood notion and all of that. I mean, the prequels are what they are, and I think I've even written some articles that really, you know, I've read some articles that go back and really give some, I think, some comparisons, and I think even with these new movies coming out, it may actually, you know, kind of grow the estimation of some of those the prequels. I mean, I've heard people, you know, talking about how it really brings, despite the shortcomings. There's an article in the New York Post about how they oozed mythology, gravitas, nonstop momentum, and unwavering earnestness, which is, you know, the Star Wars series, and that, you know, The Force Awakens, I think it has some of that, but it just doesn't quite ooze it.
Yeah, is not the word I would use, but I could see it. Right. Maybe blend. I could see a blending of both trilogies, really, the old and the new. Anyway, people that listen to the podcast know I had surgery a few weeks ago, and I unfortunately timed my surgery 2 days before the cinematic event of our lifetimes, as the media would tell you. So I've been just waiting to get, and my wife is not interested, and I probably couldn't have handled a theater right after surgery, of course. So I just saw it yesterday, but 4 weeks later. Let's see, I'd been spoiled on the big thing, and maybe we should wait before we go to the big thing, but I've been spoiled by that on that about five times in every aspect. It's funny.
That's
I was
amazing.
Telling Mark, I was like, I know who, how, when, where. I even saw a visual of it, but it really did not impact my viewing of it. In fact, I think it's kind of a minor scene, and you do have, maybe we should shelve that. So anyway, I was late to the party. I know, Mark, you saw it when opening weekend, right?
Yeah, I didn't go opening night, but I did go with my family opening weekend Sunday, and I saw it in 2D the first time with them. I had a really good time there. I did have some reservations. I was kind of taken aback by some of it, and a lot of times the second viewing of a movie is better for me because I can just kind of settle in and let it wash over me. So I wanted, both my daughter and I wanted to take it in 3D, you know, see what that looked like, and we did that the second time, and it really, you know, it, as far as the 3D goes, I thought it was, I'm pretty sure it was post-converted. I thought it really did look great. It works within, a space movie, a movie that takes place, not primarily, but at least half the movie, so to speak, in space. I think it works, you know, like it did in Gravity. And there's a couple shots where you get the, you really get the depth of the film, like the shot of Rey in the Star Destroyer carcass was great. And then there's a shot where the Star Destroyer is, you're facing the Star Destroyer and it's kind of coming out of the screen. It's not flashy.
I don't know what those things are.
So it's the big
wreck that Rey is dismantling.
That's all you had to say.
Yeah, I saw it in 3D D-Box, which, for, I don't know if D-Box is all over the country, but it's basically like a customized seat that like tilts and rattles and shakes and stuff.
Cool. Oh, nice.
And it's a pretty well done synchronization. So it really literally turns the film almost into a roller coaster ride, you know, where you're kind of being buffeted around. And so the fight scenes, the even the sound effects, the rumbles, there's speakers in the seat, they kind of enhance that whole sensory experience. So I saw it, and I have a kid that I mentor. He's a 14, actually just turned 15 years old this past weekend, and he lives in a group home, and I've been kind of following him and just kind of hanging out with him since he was like 7 or 8 years old. So we've got to know each other pretty well. So this is kind of like our post-Christmas get-together, and so I was pretty pumped to be able to take another teenager to this movie, and I'll just give you his straight-up verdict. So we watched it. It was awesome. It was incredible and everything. So I said afterwards, so what'd you think? He says, well, it was pretty good, but it could have used something a little more. It's like, oh, okay. I just spent $40 on this. I want something more than that. But that was honestly a 15-year-old kid's assessment, and he's pretty much a straight shooter. You know, if he likes it, he likes it, and if he doesn't, he doesn't feel like he's got to, you know, fluff it up or sugarcoat it. So, yeah, he thought it was pretty good, but it could use a little something more. So that's been kind of my go-to verdict, because I kind of agree. I kind of feel the same way. Like, yeah. This was all right, but I wasn't, like, bursting to just run back and see it again. And that's maybe just me. I'm at a different place in life, but I really felt like maybe this is a film that's being made for a future generation. You know, a new fan base that'll be watching these films for the next 40 years, whereas, you know, folks my age might go and we might enjoy it, but we're not going to be part of that hardcore fandom, or at least, again, I think, I'll just say, there's a time when you sort of got to kind of move on, and, you know, there's so many more great films out there. There's so much better art if you want to get on that level.
So are you going to take your 14-year-old friend to Andre Rublev next?
No. Yeah, he'd be hitting the snack stand pretty heavy, I think, you know, or falling asleep, one of the two. So all in time, right?
People do love this film.
Oh, I know, right?
And that's actually really why I couldn't wait, and I was so disappointed about my surgery timing, is just seeing people gush about how amazing this film is, and I kind of get it. And by the way, I saw it in IMAX 3D. Which worked, I thought. My chair didn't move around. I think I'm actually glad.
You probably wouldn't benefit from the D-Box presentation for a little while yet.
But there were, I agree, there were some. And for me, it wasn't really the action sequences that worked in 3D, but it was just like the landscape shots. I remember there was one scene where a ship, I guess probably the Falcon, was going over water, and just seeing like the backsplash, like that was cool. But it wasn't like, you know, like they're pointing laser or lightsabers at your face to where, you know, they're just trying to show off the 3D. It's they're not making it for 3D. They're just it's not like Avatar, I should say. And no, not knocking Avatar. Mm-hmm. I think Avatar's okay. I thought it was a fun film. It was definitely exciting. But I think that is interesting, it being for a new audience and a new generation.
I think Disney's definitely looking at this as a long-term investment. I mean, they spent, what, $4 billion on the rights? And that just came through to me with a lot of the playing it safe. You know, people talk about J.J. Abrams as the director, and I certainly know he had a job to do, but this is just like a Disney movie. I mean, and it's not like anybody who's directing or writing the screenplay is just doing this out of their own, you know, personal artistic subjective creativity. I mean, this is focus grouped and corporatized, and
this is not Shane Carruth or Kenneth.
Right. This is just it's being run through the blender to make sure that all the edges are worn down to hit that, you know, mass denominator, not lowest common denominator in terms of, you know, vulgarity. No. But it's just like we want a blockbuster, we want a sure thing, we want a slam dunk, and that's exactly what they went out and accomplished.
And I don't want to say I think it's fun. It's a ride, and I think they achieve that. But I guess it's almost like a reboot in a way, because it's so similar to the first one. And in fact, I kind of wonder if it will sort of overshadow A New Hope and become like really Episode One, and then maybe people will watch the prequels after this. So of course, it depends on where they go.
Abrams is the reboot guy. I mean, he did the same thing with Star Trek and brought a new audience to the
Although
Star Trek.
Although, I just have to say, I could not get through either one of those movies just because it's such a departure from what Star Trek means to me. I guess I'm TV series Star Trek. I liked the early Star Trek movies, and even the later ones with Patrick Stewart and the Next Generation, all that. They were fine, but the new one was just so hyped up, and so, you know, all these action sequences where the large craft of whatever sort is skidding to the edge of the cliff and then dang. It's like, does that just have to be in every single movie that this guy makes? You know, I don't know. It just, those devices just, you know, because it just does not feel like it's really earned a danger. It doesn't really feel like there's a real chance mm-hmm. that thing's going to actually go over the cliff, you know? Or if it they're going to find some way of dancing on the edge of the thing before and then jumping off before it plummets into the chasm, you know? So it's like, this is the part that got distracting for me, even in this Star Wars Force Awakens, is that so many things just fell perfectly into place that it mm-hmm. really just felt like, you know, installments of just kind of progressing from one thing to the next, whether that's, you know, destroying the Starkiller or how the Millennium Falcon just happened to get picked up by Han and Chewie's, you know, tracking device or whatever, and Rey's use of the Force. I mean, we might want to unpack all those different elements, but it just got to mm-hmm. be a little bit distracting to me as I'm watching. It's like, oh, boom, nifty! Isn't that convenient how that worked out?
Some conveniences, yeah, and so and yeah, I think they wrote some shortcuts for themselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, shortcuts. It's a 2.25-hour movie.
But they had to get the characters from one spot to the other. You know, they're on this gigantic planet-sized ship, and the characters just, whoop, they happen to run into each other. It's like, oh, wasn't that nice, you know? I mean, can you find each other in the city, you know, two blocks mm-hmm. apart? You might never see each other, but bam, they're just, like, right there, you know? And so...
in this huge galaxy, yeah.
Let me ask you guys a question. I went into this pretty clean. I did look for a couple things, but one, of course, we talk about criterions here, and I think one of the cool things about the original trilogy is that it's pretty much rooted in, you know, Kurosawa, it's John Ford, you know, and also some of the old serials. If you want to Google Star Wars influences, you'll find probably like hundreds of articles that have the same 10 films, probably.
Well, it's a pastiche of...
And some TV series, right. The Flash Gordon
is a big one, So, so of course, and I think George Lucas... I don't know. I mean, they're space operas. I don't know how much they influenced the second trilogy. I think maybe less so. But just curious, do you see any of those films or any other influences in Force Awakens?
No, I think it's just a tribute to its own mythology. And so, I mean, the kind of stream of multiple influences and B movies and epic westerns and samurai battles and. You know, this mm-hmm. this even this primitive mythology, the whole Joseph Campbell hero with a thousand faces stuff, all that diversity kind of came together in the original Star Wars and made something really unique and really, really rich. You know, I mean, you know, not to take it too seriously, because it was still kind of campy. I mean, you know, even Alec Guinness said, oh, this is just fairy tale rubbish, you know. And
he was not a fan.
Right,
I think he was not a fan of how it hijacked his legacy.
Well, you know, but I think it's, I mean, his legacy is still there for anybody who takes the time. He was an incredible mm-hmm. actor, a very smart man, and very cultured. And I think it's pretty cool that he, you know, was cast in that particular role, even though maybe on a personal level it did kind of tilt things a little bit much for him, but I think it was still a very shrewd assessment. This is kind of a romp. This is kind of a big spectacle, a little bit on the goopy side, but let's have some fun with it and see where it goes. And it went on to make history. But I think because the thing has been so franchised and so homogenized that now it's just self-referential. And so, you know, I hope that with the production of these new films and with the reboot or the fresh start, that they really will start to weave in some, you know, some edgier stuff, take some true risks, and because
some new right, elements yeah, maybe
yeah. Now that they've kind of
they've made,
trimmed some
right, they've made their money, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that this was actually, until after the movie, I didn't know at all going in that it was rated PG-13. And you know, there are, I guess afterwards I can kind of see it, there are some darker elements that are darker than, you know, some of the original trilogy films. But I'd have to agree with you, David. I think it is mostly self-referential. I mean, it really, it's, as people have complained, probably ad nauseum, it follows the beats and the storyline of A New Hope, almost, you know, beat for beat. And there are some other elements, like, you know, you would see in from The Empire Strikes Back. But, you know, I think maybe there are some elements that may come to play later. I do have some faith that, you know, like you had mentioned, this is really setting up future franchises mm-hmm. and future movies. And, you know, he's putting the Disney putting the trust in J.J. Abrams to be a franchise caretaker and do that, you know, really bring the movies to a new audience. It kind of made sense. I'll quote another critic who I think really stated it well. And this is brought to me by a friend of mine, Keith Silva. I had to listen to the podcast on the NPR's Fresh Air, the best of the critics' picks. They talked about movies, film, and TV. And David Edelstein called Abrams our brilliant, unimaginative director. So I don't know if you could really say it, you know, much better.
Well,
you know? Exactly.
And actually, yep.
That's where the brilliant comes from.
I was setting you guys up with that. That was kind of a loaded question because I told you I went in blind, but I did research one thing in particular. But yeah, I think the original trilogy, it did come on the heels of the American New Wave, mm-hmm. and George Lucas was very much at the center of that.
Yeah.
And right, you know, he watched all those foreign movies in the 60s and the 70s, 50s too. And so that...
Right.
Like you said, David, it was kind of the culmination of all those, and especially the first movie, maybe even the second as well. But so I researched was what influenced J.J. Abrams, and he says it was Terrence Malick.
Hmm.
You see it?
No.
Wow.
No.
Yeah, I didn't see it. Maybe.
Where were the shots of looking up at the trees?
I guess there is some whispering here and there.
he said that he was influenced by Malick by slowing it down and by actually when he was telling the story to not just to avoid the temptation to cut quickly and to speed it up. And actually, some scenes do. I think he does let breathe. Others, you know, like of course the action scenes. You know, those are pretty fast-paced. Yeah, it really is kind of a ride that there's not a whole lot of character moments. In fact, I think that's one of, even though it's fun, and I think I like it more than you, David.
Yeah.
Maybe not a whole lot more, but
well,
maybe not as much as you, Mark. Mark, what do you think of it?
Well, I mean, I probably overpraised it when I was talking about it on the First Time Watchers because I was on a little bit of that, you know, that Star Wars high, but... and seeing it again, I just enjoyed the ride. But, you know, the farther I get away from it, I do have some issues with the film. And it's the same thing I had with, you know, David talked about the Star Trek films. I mean, I think it's a well-made film overall. You know, it's hard to poke a lot of holes into the way that it's constructed.
Mm-hmm.
Other than, you know, if you were to completely remove yourself from comparing it to A New Hope. I mean, I think it's pretty well done overall. I do think it's a little bit small in scope. It feels a little bit small in scope, and I had some issues with some of the framing. I thought there was an overuse of close-up, and just you don't really get a sense of the scope of, you know, really what's going on in this universe. It just doesn't have that, you know, that mythic quality that, right. You know, people have talked about in the original and even that the, you know, the prequels were able to maintain even with the issues that they have. So
yeah, kind of goes from space, you know, to space. Yeah. I could say, well, David, what do you like about it?
Well, what I liked about it was what the production values. I mean, you do feel that, that gravity of these X-Wing fighters roaring down and, you know, just the beauty of the frame composition, the mm-hmm. physical special effects. I think the actors, this kind of, you know, obviously more diverse and more generationally attuned to today's audience. You've got a lead female mm-hmm. character,
sure,
a Hispanic, yes. An African American man, and so you really are, you know, reaching a pretty broad audience and an international, a global audience. And that's commendable. I think it's really good. And these actors are all very attractive. I mean, I think they're physically attractive. I think, you know, that's a part of Rey's appeal. But I think, in a sense, there's also a sort of a shallowness or a surface appeal that I don't see them nearly as compelling as characters as, you know, Han Solo, Princess Leia, and Luke were. And I was never even that big of a fan of the original Luke. I always thought he was a little bit of a whiny mm-hmm. little dweeb, you know. But he was cast, and now I think the casting for the new series, or the new, you know, the newest episode, is a little bit more shrewd. It's obviously been, again, focus grouped, and really, you know, they nailed it. Whereas in the prequels, you had a little bit of vanity casting, and, you know, of course, then there's the whole Jake Lloyd thing, and
yippee!
Kind of exactly, and just the corniness of the manufactured slang, and mm-hmm. and just that stiltedness. Really, I mean, that stiltedness is in the original, the first three movies as well, but it really comes to the forefront in the prequels, and it just kind of gets a little harder to ignore there.
The tax debates were not there.
the politics and some of that meandering. But you know, but that's world building, and that's actually George Lucas kind of playing to the nerds in his fan base, and there's people who dig that kind of thing. It could have been done a little bit better, but you know, I didn't get that same sense of world building. In this movie, I mean, yeah, we're on the desert planet, and there's that little trading post, but you don't really get a sense of it being a real place in the same depth. Even like the Tatooine, where you've got different mm-hmm. villages and different locations that you're seeing, and I'll just let you know, I've got my original VHS of Star Wars, of the cropped 4:3 image and the blurry, you know, but as I'm watching this and again seeing all these great scenes and all these classic quotes, I don't know that you're going to have the same kind of the richness of quotes and memorable moments in the new movie that you had in the original. And I guess I would just invite viewers to just look at the IMDb quotes page for Star Wars: A New Hope and Star Wars: The Force Awakens, and just, you know, the quotes in the new movie are just really quips. They're just little, mm-hmm. almost like little reaction shots, you know, and it just feels a little bit forced and just not as durable. So
forced.
Forced. Oh, there we go again. Yeah.
But there are a lot of the quotes, I think, are actually callbacks, you know, like
exactly.
Little things like Solo saying, "Oh, is there a trash compactor?" You know, of
right.
course, that's the, you know, the, a lot of wink and nods to the audience.
I have a bad feeling about this.
Do you think we should get that big spoiler out of the way?
Oh, let's go for it. Yeah,
I think
it's
okay.
On your mind.
Right.
Yeah,
everybody,
we're into it.
Han Solo is dead. I'm sure everybody knew that.
I forgot all about that.
He was killed by his emo son in a crying rage.
Oh, yeah. Emo Kylo Ren. Yeah.
So, I actually think, and this might be a minority opinion, even though I like the original trilogy, I actually think that Han Solo is kind of one of the weak points. And I'm not going to overpraise, Hamill or Carrie Fisher, but I think some of the other actors are okay. But
from the original trilogy, you think Han is overpraised, or
in the original
movie?
Trilogy, I actually am not crazy about Han. I mean, I think he's
a smart aleck sidekick, and he was bit player. So that's really all he was meant to be, you know.
Right. There's
he became bigger as the trilogy went on.
They tried to write more depth into him, but he really was almost comic relief, you know. I think maybe not comic. Well, yeah. I mean, him and Chewie, and then the little winks and nods to each other, and the little catchphrases. So he was really basically doing the same thing in this movie. So I'm actually kind of, you know, glad that he's out of the way. I think that, you know, even though now Skywalker's in, I think that they can maybe get a little more serious. They can, you know, maybe, like you said, world building. You know, I don't want to spend 20 minutes in a political, State of the Union address, but but I think even though I don't love it as much as a lot of people, I like it. I think there is some potential for the franchise to grow legs. Now, I don't expect it to be on the level of Kurosawa or, you know, anything. Or even the original trilogy. But
I think they might be overshooting if they were really to try to go for that kind of awesomeness. But I think I'm intrigued to see what they make of the Luke Skywalker character. I mean, obviously mm-hmm. this movie was just a big tease for that. But they could go in some interesting places if they give Mark Hamill, and if Mark Hamill really wants to get into it. I don't know. I mean, I don't even know what these old generation actors really desired to to do, you know, as far as their role. I guess I've heard that, you know, Harrison Ford was kind of ready to do a one and done, mm-hmm. and I think they yeah.
he wanted out since Empire,
right. And so they and I think so. They did a pretty memorable job of, you know, writing him out rather than he just kind of flew off and was never seen again. So
right. I saw his paycheck though. I don't think he. I think he wanted into this one, and he's especially happy about it now.
One last time.
I think if I remember, he got $25 million plus a point on the revenue.
Wow! Wow! Yeah. He's doing all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the Han Solo character, since you had brought him up, Aaron, is, you know, he's one of the characters that I felt was missing from the prequel trilogy. Yeah. I think we could have used, you know, some of his humor in those. That was one of the things that was missing. And so I was kind of, the first time I saw the movie, The Force Awakens, I was a little bit taken aback that they did off him. I was, you know, I thought they would kind of keep him going, but it seems like maybe, you know, by getting rid of a character like that, they are going to bring it back to, you know, the mystical, the all mystical mm-hmm. force, and really focus on that more, you know, with a character like Luke Skywalker. And you had the old Rey character, of course, having some force abilities, yeah. And you know, you even had Finn, who finds a lightsaber, and who knows what his abilities are going to be. So it seems like maybe they're, yeah. you know, kind of bringing the
well.
The
let's talk a little bit about the Force then, because I feel like this movie also, and the franchise as a whole, is really in danger of suffering from what I'll call the Force inflation. Like in the original movie, the Force is kind of this. It is this mystical, it's kind of this debatable thing, you know, where, you know, you can believe in it, you might not. I mean, rational people wouldn't.
Right, right.
It's this kind of old fairy tales, mythology, hoodoo type of stuff. And now the Force is like so palpable and so incredibly powerful and so visible to any objective observer. You know, they didn't mention the midichlorians in this movie, right. but they might as well have,
yeah.
because now the Force is really just like something you're born with. It's like a magic. It's like a supernatural ability that you just sort of have. And you know, Rey is a very appealing character, but mm-hmm. it just comes pretty doggone easy to her. And that's another thing. I just felt like some of the mystery, some of the aura and the, you know, the intrigue of the Force has been kind of sacrificed. Now, I'll use a little anecdote, going back to my kids again. You know, when Pokemon first came out, of course, part of it is the characters and the cartoons, but there's also this card game that comes along with it. Mm-hmm. And we all had our own Pokemon decks, and I had, you know, the original deck with, you got electric and psychic energy and grass and fire and water and fighting energies and all of that stuff, right? So I had a pretty good Pokemon deck. I had my Mewtwo and I had my, you know, characters and everything was good. And then, you know, a couple years later, after kind of the phase had kind of come and gone, my youngest son, Derek, got a bunch of Pokemon cards, but he had gotten the newer ones. And we sat down to play a game, and he just annihilated me because he was playing with all these dark energies and all these mysterious. And it was like, you know, and his hit points were just like invincible. He was like this solid wall. I couldn't even get through him. And it's because the game had just kind of grown kind of more sensational and more, you know, the powers had just become so invincible compared to the original version. And it's like, you know, back when Superman first began, he could jump over a building and he could lift heavy objects, but with a little bit of strain, and then he becomes invincible after a while. And so the character loses some of its mystery and some of its vulnerability. And I kind of wonder if the Force has already kind of gotten too big or
watered
it's,
down
it's,
a little. Well, it's too, yeah, it's yeah. too accessible. Mm. Well, you know, it's if the Force is a religion, you kind of, with,
you can debate it. You know, you've got believers and unbelievers.
Well,
right?
Rey was an unbeliever yeah. until,
right.
really until Han says, oh, it's all true.
Right.
And right then, and then she's like, oh, wow, it's all true. And plus, oh, I can command Stormtrooper Daniel Craig to let me go.
Yeah, yeah. And she can pilot this rusty old Hulk of a Millennium Falcon and make it, not just get it going, but just make it do incredibly crazy maneuvers and, you know, and the lightsaber and just
quite the mechanic,
any number
too,
of things,
yeah.
right.
Hold her own.
Yeah,
with
she
Kylo,
yeah. she
you know.
Could do it everything. Yeah, she's pretty handy with, but, and I, yeah, a lot of those I think are they overwrote the character. I think that she is a stronger Pokemon deck than the original Luke Skywalker. but yeah, I actually could get behind her. I thought she was a little more. In fact, I think she was the best actress of the group. I thought.
Oh yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
And in fact, I thought is it Boyega, John Boyega? Mm-hmm. I thought he was actually a little weaker, and I know his character was supposed to be scared, and you know that's. But I think he actually overdid the fear, and also he was a little chummy with Oscar Isaac. I mean, I know he saved his life, but you know, come on.
Yeah, that was a little too. I would agree. It was a little too chummy. I did think there was some chemistry though between Rey and Finn. I think somehow that did work. You know, maybe a little bit over the top in him, you know, going after her. But and I think we talked earlier that Oscar Isaac seemed a little bit wasted too, and which I would agree. I mean, everything I've seen him in lately has just been great. Like Inside Llewyn Davis and. Most Violent Year, and he seems a little bit out of place here. Like, you know, like they didn't really need an actor of his
He was just a guy to
he
play
was a fighter pilot, Gamera. Yeah. And actually, except for Luke, because Luke was a fighter pilot / Jedi. But the other fighter pilots, you don't really know them. I mean, at least I don't know them. I think there's one guy, was it Wedge something?
Wedge, yeah.
Yeah, so...
he's pretty much the Wedge character.
He is the Wedge character, yeah. So that's all he does is fly. So, well, maybe with, you know, of course, they know that Isaac has chops, and I'm sure they knew this. Of course, they probably knew this before going into this. But hopefully they'll do a little something with him going forward, besides just being BFFs with the Stormtrooper.
Yeah, I mean, it makes me, I hope that, of course, the next two movies are being, not to jump ahead too much, but they are being penned by Rian Johnson. He's directing the second one and has written both of them. And I really hope that this is set the groundwork for allowing the franchise to take more chances. I mean, I came out of the movie originally the first time thinking, you know, I didn't expect The Empire Strikes Back and how different really that was from the original. But I wish there had been more moments like that. And I'm really hoping that, you know, we see some changes, you know, really kind of shake up the franchise a bit. And they're, you know, they're doing offshoot movies too. I wonder, you know, where all of that is going to kind of
It's going to be the Star Wars universe, kind of like maybe there'll be 10 shows on Netflix next year.
Right.
And maybe these spin-offs could actually go in more adventurous places. Maybe if they feel this need to make the official trilogy some sort of safe, canonical, you know, paint by numbers thing, that's, I guess, do what you got to do. But you know, let's get gnarly with some of these side projects, you know, and roll the dice. Yeah,
like Marvel, maybe like Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, that's I guess that exists in that universe, but that's pretty far out. That's pretty adventurous. So I actually like that one a lot. So I do like Rian Johnson. I'm a big fan of Looper, big fan of Brick, and I love Breaking Bad, and I actually thought the episodes that he did on Breaking Bad were good. Are you a fan or aware of him, David?
You know, I've only seen a few episodes of Breaking Bad. It's just, you know, one of those things that maybe someday I'll catch up on, but it has never been a priority for me.
He did the later ones, but have you seen Brick or Looper? I'm sure he's done more... than those.
No, I'm
he did
not
Brothers
really familiar
Blue,
with those.
But yeah, those are his two main films. I'm definitely
I've heard all good stuff, that's intriguing that somebody with a little bit more of an edge to his resume is in this. So that
he definitely has edge.
Okay, and if that's the case, then commendations to Disney for maybe branching out a little bit. I'll hope for the best here.
He's not as much of a safe bet, really, as Abrams. You know, it's really not surprising to me, again, that they went with Abrams first to bring everybody back in into this franchise, you know, and then let's get someone who, with, like you said, more of the edge, maybe a better writer, director, and let's take a chance on this guy. So
yeah, I like the way you describe Abrams. I mean, he really is a safe bet, but he's almost a populist director. He's gonna put the butts in the seats.
Takes a very particular talent and ability to marshal this project and to bring it, you know, safely on delivery. I mean, you know, sometimes the creative risk takers they flop, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think you might even be able to say that about George Lucas. I mean, I don't know if any of the Star Wars movies were ever flops in that commercial sense, but they didn't leave that warm fondness that's going to propel the franchise forward the way that Disney was counting on it, because I think Disney saw this is an incredible property. There's really mm-hmm. nothing else quite like it. Not even the Marvel or DC comic book franchises have the kind of a potential reach that Star Wars does, because
no, not at all. Yeah,
those comics are you know somewhat weighted down by some of the geekier implications. I mean, a lot of people went to see the Avengers, but they mm-hmm. don't. I mean, I see a lot of people who I think of as pretty, you know, stable, respectable, middle-class folks who are also pretty huge Star Wars geeks in a way that they'll never get that geeky about any anything comic book else. Properties,
sure,
you
right,
know?
Right. If you can start going to these side characters.
Yeah.
Well, actually, Ant-Man, you know, that worked okay, but I can't see a whole lot of other obscure comics so working quite as well.
Right.
You know, Don, another Abrams influence, I don't know if it's an Abrams because it's an influence on the entire trilogy, but I did see a lot of Triumph of the Will in this one. Like,
well, you know, I wondered about that. I mean, there was that huge set piece with all the armies and ranked in their columns and stuff,
yeah.
And it was impressive visually, but what was the point of it? I mean, how did that really fit into the First Order? I mean, it definitely has the feel, and I guess again it gets back to that. It looks good, but why did they have to be lined up in ranks like that anyways? Who were they trying to impress? They're, you know, in Nazi Germany,
right.
That spectacle of all the troops and all the soldiers, you know, Sieg Heiling in perfect unison, that was propaganda meant to intimidate the rest of the world, saying, you know, don't mess with us. We'll come and get you, you know, mm-hmm. and that was pretty mm-hmm. effective. I didn't feel like the First Order is actually sending a message to anybody. They're just putting on a bit of a show, maybe for their own amusement or something, you know.
Well, yeah, that's exactly what they were doing. I was amused. But yeah. I think it's, you know, Nazis bad. You know, they're just instilling that they are villainous. I think the series has always painted the good guys and the bad guys in very, very black and white strokes.
White. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I'm okay with that.
Domhnall Gleeson is no Adolf Hitler either, I would say.
He definitely doesn't have the stash, but
no.
But you know, in fairness, well, I'm not gonna. Some Kurosawa films did paint some of the good guys and the bad guys black and white. I'm Seven Samurai. There are shades of gray, but you know,
yeah.
Hidden Fortress, even, you know, it's. So anyway, while we. I know we probably should wrap up soon. We don't want to go on forever, but maybe we should talk about the villains. Well, I mean, we just touched on some, but what about Adam Driver? You know, that was, I mean, he wasn't quite Vader. I mean, he was like Vader's younger sibling that has some emotional problems. But I thought that was a different take.
That was
actually
interesting,
surprised.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they made a smart choice in not trying to, you know, make him Vader 2, where he's already fully progressed in his, you know, his evilness. I mean, you know, part of the thing with the original Star Wars was Darth Vader just sort of comes out of nowhere, but he's mm-hmm. incredibly malevolent and sinister and intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, you just can't do that every single time. You know, even Darth Maul and the Phantom Menace kind
of
looked wicked, but
came
you know,
out of
he,
nowhere.
He,
yeah,
yeah, right. He didn't have that same heft or that substance to him, and obviously, you know, he was a character destined to not even make it through the full first movie. So
that was
that. So he wasn't really a Vader replacement. But I think actually, and in talking to my sons again, they're adults in their 20s now. They all pretty much thought the Kylo Ren character was one of their favorite parts of the movie. I think they could sort of relate to him on a generational level, and I thought, well, that's an interesting angle. Obviously, I'm like, this boy has some issues here, you know, and the way he just kind of rants and thrashes and acts out, it's a bit comical, but it's a different style of villainy, and it implies that this character's got more evolutions ahead of him. So mm-hmm. there could be some very right. interesting things that happen with that.
And in fact, that's a good observation that Darth Vader came out of nowhere. And of course, the prequels developed him. We see his origin right. story. So I think this could be actually just further blending. This could be the origin story of Vader too. We see him as a immature, you know, he's not as strong. Well, he got beat by a girl, you know, a girl that didn't even know the Force existed 10 minutes prior. And
right.
he got shown. Yeah. And plus the emotional. And I think, you know, the action with his daddy and, you know, the beat down he took, I think that's going to probably harden him a little bit. And mm-hmm. But knowing Adam Driver, I expected a really, really grizzled, you know, mangled, dark character. So I was when he took off the helmet for the first time, I was like, wow, really? Is that a driver?
Yeah, that's what my son said. He's like, boy, I liked Kylo Ren, but I liked him best when he had his mask on. And, I could certainly see that. I mean, as far as the character, I did like him quite a bit. And I'm with your kids, David, that they probably one of my favorite, if not my favorite character, just because he is a different villain. I mean, he's a petulant child. And you know who is unformed. He's very young, and he's you know trying to be the quote unquote badass of the universe.
Right.
You know at
right.
this point, and he's not there. He's shown to.
And
be
he's trying to teach his parents a lesson. You know, you didn't raise me right, so I'm going to make your life hell.
Success.
You know?
Right. He taught a pretty big lesson. And I also like that there's a power struggle too. That you know between him and I don't think Donald Gleason was really too well developed.
No. So,
in fact, he kind of reminded me of the same kind of character in the first one that was with Vader. So hopefully they'll do a little better. But there did seem to be some, disjointed, conflict between the two. So I did kind of like that. I liked the First Order. Of course, you know, when you're blasting lasers from the sun, how can you top that in the next episode?
Well, yeah. I really hope we are done with planet destroying devices any sort. Yes. If Disney or whoever has taken any feedback, I think they realize that ship has sailed, that hand has been played, and we just, you know, we're just going to have and you know, this goes back to some of my gripes with the big budget blockbuster franchise movies, again, comic books, sci-fi stuff. I mean, does everything have to be this, you know, planet devastating, you know, colossus? I mean, the Avengers has kind of suffered from that as well, because mm-hmm. the stakes have already just been raised so incredibly high. You're going to have something that's going to swallow up the entire solar system to top the previous episode or something.
Right.
You know, it's mm-hmm. like
some black
hole
or something.
Let's just get into more. You know, I guess more psychological or more twisted types of villainy that is seeking just to corrupt what's good rather than physically annihilate the entire, you know, planet. Because unfortunately, like when the planet got destroyed in this Force Awakens, it just felt sadly inconsequential. You know, it's like,
well, it was the Death Star just bigger. They actually said so.
Right. right. And so we just got to find that one way to blow it up, so we'll just do that. And it's just like, wait a minute, an entire civilization and a whole planet has been destroyed. And you know, that happened in A New Hope as well. Mm-hmm. And you know, the planet's destroyed, well, we move on. And but you know, if you're going to really raise the stakes and then cash them in like that, you know, this is a pretty atrocious crime, and let that sink in. If you're gonna slaughter that many,
right?
Let's mm-hmm. let's reckon with that a little bit.
Well,
otherwise
it
becomes a very cheap gesture, right?
You know, in A New Hope, you know, they had the connection with Leia. I mean, it was Leia's planet that was destroyed, so you could really
right.
you know focus in on, you know, here's how it affects this one person rather than
right.
just these nameless people that we don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was no reflection on it whatsoever. It's almost like there is no acknowledgement of it. So yeah, that's a good gripe. It's definitely with flaws. So I of course we rate stuff, but it's, you know, it's 1 to 10. I don't know how we can rate this against Criterion's, but you want to give it a go?
I did a 7. I mean, I did a 3.5-star review on Letterboxd, which was very, mm-hmm. very short. But I think a 7 acknowledges that this is slick, 21st century entertainment of the highest order in terms of production values, mm-hmm. in terms of, you know, just the presentation, and even just in terms of not completely blowing it, which, you know, wasn't a guaranteed shoe-in, but, you know, like I said, they've played it safe. They got the job done. It was a nice, tasty Big Mac. With the trim-ins, you know, the kind that they show you in the commercials, not the kind they actually hand you through the drive-thru.
Right, right. Well, hearing your talk, actually, I expected a lower rating, so you're...
Yeah, I wonder.
So, yeah. What about you, Mark?
Yeah, I was being more the critic, I guess, you know, but it was still a lot of fun. I still, you know, cheered and smiled and enjoyed myself.
Yeah. I really feel like, you know, talking to you guys and when we were talking offline, I really have to stick to my guns and go with my gut when I'm thinking about movies. You guys have been a good influence there because, you know, I gave this movie an A-minus when I talked to the first-time watchers. And even when I was there talking to them, I just felt like, it's not quite there. You know, I'm not being true to myself. And it's a B movie if I was going to give it a grade. So I'm right there with you, David. I mean, as far as a 1 to 10, it's a 7. I could maybe go as high as a 7.5. It's a solid film. It does the franchise caretaking. I really got exactly what I expected from a J.J. Abrams Star Wars movie. And I'm nothing more, nothing less. Yeah. I'm fine with it. And I'm, more so looking forward to where things are going to go. We're going to find out about characters like Snoke, you know, who's this, you know, what's his influence?
Right, and, right, right.
You know, the Kylo Ren character and, you know, where
we didn't even get into
back,
Snoke,
so.
But yeah. And the Darth Vader obsession too. Yeah.
What's going to happen with, I mean, yeah, it's really going to be Kylo Ren's story, I think, going forward. And of course we'll bring Luke back and Rey's story, of course. You know, in their training and their mentorship. But what would you give it, Aaron? What rating?
I've had a day to reflect, and I've mm-hmm. actually, you know, it in this first day, I mean, like you, I didn't give it an A-minus out of the theaters, but I was entertained, so I think I also went 7 with, like, David, and then I knocked it down to a 6, and then I bumped it back up to a 7, and I think I might... But the thing, there's no half points. I think I might even give it a 7.5 because it really, really does succeed. If it's just trying to entertain us, it does succeed there.
Well, it'll get me back for the next one, you know. And I'm not sure I'll see another Avengers movie or maybe I might see Doctor Strange because I always dug that character. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's not like I feel obliged. Whereas Star Wars, I certainly will not miss that. So they got me intrigued.
They got your 1750.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I also, I even, Mark, you know, going back to your kind of original take, I mean, there is something to be said about seeing it on the opening weekend. It's this huge cultural celebration, this event, and that's always going to kind of rev things up a little bit. So I don't think you have anything to, you know, apologize or even have to explain. It's just things settle in over time a little bit differently. That's why we really should never canonize or say films are instant classics until they've really sort of played themselves out in the cultural marketplace for a while. And, you know, what do they influence and how do they sit in our memory upon reflection? And what's that second or third watch going to reveal or not reveal?
True, yeah.
So it's a process.
We might not know how we feel about this one until all three are done.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
It's hard to pass judgment.
Yeah.
Can I give my kids rating quick? I just
please
wanted to.
Do, yeah. If it's not 10, I'm disappointed.
it's close, but
especially
I did want to mention too to what David was saying because it reminded me of something. I think my daughter was a little disappointed going on Sunday rather than like Friday because she was hoping for more people dressed up.
We have
a group here in Vermont called the 501st that dress up as the stormtroopers, and they were there, you know, opening night, Thursday night, midnight showing. You know, we didn't get that, so you know, there's something to, like you said, David, to be said for that. You know, that weekend, going there and seeing it. But my son said it's his second favorite movie of 2015, next to Jurassic World. He's a dinosaur guy, so.
Well,
it
guess
beat
what?
Out,
the same director is going to do the not the next one, the one after that, right? I'm not a Jurassic World fan, so no. Yeah, no offense to your son.
No, but, no, it's the dinosaurs. It's you know, but hey, it beat out the Walk.
I could have gone for about. Yeah.
You know, it beat out the Avengers. It beat out Mission Impossible and Ant-Man. So you know, it's it's there. And my daughter said, as far as the 3D goes in Star Wars, it didn't make her vomit. So that was good.
Well, it's a good thing she didn't watch it in the revolving chairs that, that David did. No, I actually the Avengers is a good comparison because I think everybody liked the first one. In fact, I think the reviews for the first one were pretty similar to the reviews for Force Awakens.
Yeah,
but the you know, and then people liked the Captain America. America's, not so much the Thor's, but and then the last one I didn't like this Avengers at all. I tried, I wanted to, but yeah. So that there could be some with all these saturation, people might get a little overloaded. So we'll have to see if the magic can continue. So
yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, this art film podcast
has talked about our this big nostalgic this little art house film called Star Wars. Yeah, right.
That's a fun digression, though. I like, you know, taking a break from these serious films. You know, Breaker Morant, Hiroshima Mon Amour, great films. But you know, it's time. It's sometimes fun. I actually would like to do this again sometimes. Well,
I think there are films that, you know, hit the mainstream or maybe even, you know, theatrical independent stuff. I'd be happy to do more of this or even just to hear more takes about things that are happening, you know, in the here and now before Criterion or Janus Films gets a hold of them.
Sure.
I mean, I know on Criterion Cast, Josh does a lot of reviews of newer movies, and so that is part of the Criterion Cast world as we do look at what's happening in, you know, not just general cinema in terms of all the pop stuff or just every other franchise. But I think Star Wars is truly a unique phenomenon, and I'm glad that we took some time to pick this one apart a little bit, even if it's not perhaps up to the you know, the weepy, glowy, stars in the eyes, you know, fanboy stuff that, you know, some of the first reactions are. But, you know, let's continue the conversation and see where it leads.
But, you know, if something like, you know, and we missed the, well, we didn't even have a podcast, at least Mark and I didn't have a podcast then, but if something like Mad Max Fury Road comes out next year, now that's something that I think could be fun. Now, it'd be tough with some of the Criterion ones because we're all over the country, and, you know, 45 days, we're all going to see it at different times. So,
right.
Food for thought. But anyway, I hope people like our little breakdown of your favorite movie.
Yeah, hope we don't get trolled too much, but hey, you know.
I think we've been
had to be honest.
Yeah, and we all like it. So
yeah, it's 7.5. You know, 7.5. That's a positive review. We all enjoyed the movie. So,
all right. Well, shall we shut it down?
Yeah. Thanks everyone for joining Criterion Close Up. We'll just let folks know where to find us online: CriterionCloseUp.com/podcast. You can find us on Twitter at CriterionCU. And I wanted to let folks know, well, I should mention too, Criterion Close Up on Facebook. And David Blakesley, thank you so much for joining us. Glad we could do this. Where can folks find you online?
My blog is titled Criterion Reflections, and I am this close to wrapping up all the films of 1967.
Nice.
For new listeners, maybe if Star Wars drew you and you don't know about what I do, I started in 2009 reviewing all the films in the Criterion Collection in chronological order. So I'm just, like I say, just about done with 1967 and on the verge of 1968. There's a list called the Criterion Chronology on Letterboxd if you want to sort of see the full layout there from the earliest Charlie Chaplin Silence up until, was it Blue is the Warmest Color? Or no, 2 Days, 1 Night, I think, is the newest Criterion release. So it's a long-term project. Maybe it'll take me the rest of my life to get through it. obviously, I do a podcast called The Eclipse Viewer, part of the Criterion Cast Hyperbolic Network that Aaron and Mark have just joined as of this month. So, I do podcasting, I do writing, and I just really enjoyed the opportunity to kind of get a few of these thoughts of mine about this movie out there in the open. So thanks for having me on.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for joining us.
Good point about Criterion Cast. This episode will show up on the Criterion Cast Master Feed. So hello, guys. Star Wars. I'm Aaron West. I'm at Twitter, aWest505. Occasionally post an interesting thing or two. And yeah, I... haven't really been blogging, so I won't plug that. But I'm enjoying my time with Criterion Cast and with you guys. And now that I can get to the theater more, I look forward to catching up on more new stuff, too.
More new movies, yeah.
So.
And I'm Mark Kearney. Folks can find me online at on Twitter, at Mark Kearney. It's H-U-R-N-E, and Letterboxd is the same, H-U-R-N-E. So thanks, everyone, for joining us for Criterion Close-Up, talking about Star Wars The Force Awakens, Episode 7. And we'll catch you next time.
You will press the stop recording button. That was a Jedi mind trick, no? Okay. All right.
I stopped the recording button.
Come on, Daniel Craig.